This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, brought to you by Gold Rock Capital. Each week, we look at how high net worth families can improve their lives, decisions, and investments in a deeply uncertain world. We always aim to provide practical information, even if we can't offer specific investment advice. Welcome to the Definitely Uncertain podcast. My name is Darren Rockman and I'm a partner at Gold Rock Capital, the 21-year-old multifamily office servicing high net worth families in Israel and around the world. And today on the podcast, Dr. Yael Hadass. Hi, Dr. Hadass.
Hello. How are you?
Nice to have you. I'm great. Nice to have you on the show. Yael is the academic head of economics at the International School at Reichman University, and she's also the general manager of the Shokin Publishing House. Yael has a PhD in political economics and government from Harvard, and a BA and an MA in economics, and a BA in English literature, which is going to be very relevant to what we're going to talk about from Tel Aviv University. She also runs a website called Economics for All, which you can find at yaelhadass.com. And that website tries to explain economic concepts in simple terms for everybody in the public. Other than her other things that she does, she gives lectures and workshops to try help promote financial literacy and education for all. She also is the host of a podcast recently launched called Future Economics. She's married to Daron, who himself is an economist and a CPA, and they have together three boys. So welcome to Definitely Uncertain. We're glad to have you here. And let's start by asking the question that you know so much about, which is, what is financial literacy?
Oh, what is financial literacy? So financial literacy is really the understanding of, you know, how money works, if you ask me. It's two things. It's understanding how money works over time, if you ask, you know, you can say it in this respect. It's the understanding of how markets that money is involved in work, such as the stock market and the bond market and things like that. But it also the understanding of how we as individuals should take decisions given all the information that we need to learn. And it's also, in my at least in my opinion, it's even wider than that. It also requires the understanding of, you know, the working of the central bank or the working of the government in the economic aspect of it. This is actually much higher level. Most of the people who would talk with you about financial literacy would mainly talk about managing savings or managing debt. But I think it's bigger than that.
Right. So really from the sort of micro household level, from your view, all the way through to the big macro.
Why? Okay, I think the reason it's so important is because first and foremost, we live longer. We live much longer, and we have to basically manage our finances over time. It's not like, you know, okay, I'm going to work and I'm going to have, and you know, I'm going to have whatever. We know for a fact that there are going to be many years that we are not going to work. And we need to sort of like invest and save towards this time. By the way, it's a big question today, because today the retirement age is around the 60s and people live until the 80s or even more. And with the medicine that all the time improves, they say it's going to be much, much longer. And it looks to me that the policy regulation do not adjust. People are, you know, in better health now today in their 70s, and still the retirement age is as it is. Yep. So, and plus, you know, there's other things that are not also related to retirement, such as, you know, ageism and all kinds of things when we see older people can't get jobs. So that means we need from very early age to sort of plan our finances over time. And it's something that that everybody has to do, and the vast majority of people are not trained to do.
Right. And of course, that's not only managing pensions, it's also having a good understanding of expenses and how that relates to income, debt, interest rates, and those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I said that is because all the time our decisions determine three things. We decide, you know, how much to work, and that determines our income. We decide how much to spend, that determines our spending. And basically the delta of both if you subtract the spending from the income, then that's actually your amount that you're either saving taking loans. And managing all that requires understanding of interest rates and all these things. So in a way, I may have been a bit short on explaining it.
That's great. So given that, as a professional, what do you view as some of the biggest challenges in explaining this huge world of finance? And, you know, you really expanded the boundaries of what financial literacy are quite wide. So what are the challenges involved in teaching people and making sure they're educated?
The challenges are, I would say that they are twofold. On one thing, the concepts are not easy. It's not so easy to understand, you know, how the central bank works and, you know, the interest rate and so on. And also, it's not easy to understand even mathematically the effect of compounded interest. So even if you are, you know, making plans on your savings, on your loans, you don't always understand in full the cost of these things. So there are things that intrinsically complex in understanding it and explaining it. That's one thing. But the other thing is the behavioral economics aspect of it. We are not really rational. You know, economists like to say, you know, economists started with the basic assumption that we are rational, and then came the behavioral economics, you know, with the works, for instance, of Kahneman and Tversky, and, you know, and who are actually were psychologists. And they said, listen, we do not make rational decisions, which means that even if we have all the information, we might be biased for all kinds of reasons. So the combination of these two things make all the financial literacy attempts today in the world really, really hard. And I can tell you there's a lot of research in the OECD and in other organizations that try to understand, you know, the impact of financial literacy plan education. And they see that it's still, there are shortcomings. It's not perfect. It's like people get some, but still can make not the best decisions.
So that's
a big challenge.
Right. So that's really interesting. You put together two parts here. One of them is perhaps easier, which is information and education. And actually, you know, obviously, it's hard to make sure that everybody has that. But getting that out to people is something that's quite doable. But how do you deal with the bias and the behavioral side of things? Because you can teach people all you want about making sure you save more than you spend. But if there is an inherent bias that says, I want to eat that ice cream right now, or I want to buy that, you know, new iPhone right now, what are you going to do about it?
So that's actually a great question that has been taught quite a lot. And I can tell you that you cannot do, you cannot solve it in any aspect, but definitely it has been proven that you can do it by all kinds of nudges and by all kinds of sort of manipulating the way you are explaining things. For example, there's a very known economic paper where they did an experiment in a company in the US that, you know, in the US, unlike in Israel, you are not the employer is not the one who makes the decision of how much to deduct for retirement. It's something that the worker needs to make these decisions. Right. So the employers actually offer that to the workers. Now there's a one really you know, seminal paper that actually looked at the following: that when you present the question to the worker, do you want us to deduct X percent from your income every month so you can save? People say, the vast majority would say no. Mm-hmm. They want to consume right now, but they actually changed it and they said, we are going to deduct X percent from your income. Now, do you want us not to do it?
Right.
When that was presented in this way, the vast majority actually chose not, said to the employer, don't do that. No, we do want you to continue with what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. So that was definitely something that the way of presentation, we call it in the professional language, framing. How you frame the question will affect the decision. And so, if you're sophisticated enough, even as policymakers, you might drive, you know, the, you know, try to overcome the biases.
So Yael, does that apply also at an individual level? And, you know, I'm thinking about parents and children, and trying to, you know, trying to get across messages over and above the educational side of it, of things, but also the behavioral side of things. Is there a way of individuals using those framing tools in order to guide you know, children, workers, et cetera, better?
Yeah, you can try it on your children. You know, you can actually, I can say that I tried on my children and it definitely works. Basically, you're saying, okay, you know, occasionally they get sums of money. They can get it from, you know, grandma who brought something to the birthday or for holiday, right, or they can get allowances. And I always tell them, listen, I'm going to take part of it to your savings. And, you know, they do have like a saving account and they can see, you know, the money adding up there. Right. And I tell them, I'm going to do that. Do you want me not to do that? And they never say no. It's actually a good idea. You definitely don't want to be in a situation where you tell them, okay, I'm going to take everything. Right. Because then they would not be happy. Right. But in general, you sort of also explain to them how, you know, what, by not using it now, you can actually also, there's another thing you should explain to them though, that it's not only putting it aside, you can actually invest it. You can actually, you know, make it grow. Yes. So, and that's actually hard to do. In the recent years, it was easy because the market was going up. So there was, you could actually show the growth. And I can tell you that as a mother, I was a bit worried that I did not tell them that it actually can go down. I did not tell them that when they were very little. Now they are teenagers. So actually I talk with them a lot about the follies of the market, right, and, you know, about long run versus short run when they're more, you know, now I have like one of my kids is really like a young man, and I can actually show him, you know, really financial information. But yeah, you should.
Okay.
So basically, this is the idea of how you can do
okay,
it.
Okay, so you can actually apply it. So then let's go back to the educational aspect.
Okay.
What are the concepts that are the most important? You know, what are the ones that should be addressed first in a process of actually educating you know, the next generation about financial matters?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost concept that young children should learn, you'll be surprised, is the interest rate. You'll be surprised. Okay. I started to talk with my sons on interest rate when they were six. And I used to explain to them that, you know, money has value, and when you're not using it, you can get compensated by the bank. You know, actually, right, the compensation is not very impressive, but never mind. And when you take a loan, you have to pay for it. And I also, another thing that I really like, I do it in my lectures a lot, is that I tell even young children the history of money. It's actually a really, really fascinating story about how people first started to you know, do barters, and then, you know, they started to have all kind of means of exchange, such as sugar and, you know, all kind of goods. And then at some point they went to metals, and then at some point they decided to put the metals at the safe of the, goldsmith.
Right.
And then they would pay the goldsmith to keep the money. And this is, and you can actually tell a whole story about how it started. This is just like a nice story. But then, you know, with kids, you can actually always explain to them, you know, when you give them allowances. And I must tell you, when kids get it, they can actually really get it. Like when I used to always ask for loans for mezuman, for like, you know, cash. You know, because I'm like, so I didn't have enough cash to pay, I don't know, the delivery person. I was like, can I take from your, you know, big bank, like 10 shekels and say, mommy, I want interest. I was like, okay, the interest is really, really low.
You got to be careful what you wish for, Yael.
Exactly. So, yeah, so I was very happy that, you know, the interest rate in the market is very low. But for that matter. But yeah, I think from age six, you have to start to talk with your children about it.
So interest rates, surprisingly, is the first thing. What would be, say, the next two or three things?
So I did start with the interest rate. Then I would definitely start to tell them about assets that their value goes up with time. like this whole idea of, you know, and explaining to them that assets can be, you know, let's say companies that, you know, are growing and their activity is growing and their income is growing and you can take part of it. Or, you know, like I would not go with children into like bonds and debt. That's like too complex, I would say. Right. But definitely this concept of you can actually not only buy, you know, candies for immediate satisfaction, but get something that the value can go up. Mm-hmm. I think this is a really fascinating way of thinking. And it also, you know, drives the imagination of kids. Of course, there's, you know, you also have to explain to them about risks and so on. But, you know, when you just talk about it and you're not, you know, they're not actually active, you basically familiarize them with terms, right. Familiarize them with all kind of ideas. And I must say, it takes a lot of time. It's not something like in one or two conversations. It's over time. You tell the stories, you talk about companies, that they are using, like Google, right. You know, or like, right. You know, Facebook, or like, I don't know, whatever, things that they is relatable. And then that's how you sort of like familiarize kids with all this financial activity.
Right. Okay. Maybe that's good for somebody who's a financial professional like yourself, or maybe like me. But for people who don't have that toolkit and don't have, you know, the depth themselves, you know, they maybe understand how to budget, maybe they know a little bit about investing. You know, how do they deal with getting these concepts across? Or is that enough? Is it enough just to be, you know, reasonably well-educated to be able to then pass that on?
So first I would start then, if this is the case, I would start with the budget. I would start with managing their own budget. By the way, this is another thing I did with my kids. That's something I did not say, you know, I started with the interest rate, but definitely talking about budget and planning is important. Right. And I would say, let's start with, you know, I definitely big believer in giving children money to play with so they can practice financial decisions. For instance, you start with really, I don't know, 20 shekels a month, like nothing when they're really, really young. And basically they want to buy stuff and they can buy candy and they can buy, you know, things that are more, you know, expensive. And if they want to buy something above their budget, then they need to save. So sort of like you talk with them about the decisions and you're basically saying, okay, you got these 20 shekels and you can buy a candy. But if you all want, for instance, I remember one of the biggest, you know, points where I saw that it really works is that my son, when he was like 10, he wanted to buy like this binocular, you know, to look at the space or something, but something very simple. And it cost 100 shekels in the toy store. And he had 20 shekels.
$10 for those who are watching this from another part of the world.
Yeah, and he got like 20 shekels per month and some from the grandmas and whatever. And I explained to him that if he wants to get that cost 100 shekels, he needs to wait until he will have enough money. Mm-hmm. It was not, and that's the first, like one of the very, very good practices, like sort of like fighting with the immediate gratification need. And he did that. He actually waited and he saved and everything. And then he saved up and he didn't use it for anything. And he actually bought this thing that cost 100 shekels, $30. And he started to use it, but it broke really quickly. And it was a big disappointment. You know, he was waiting. And then he told me, no, mother, I think it was a cheap toy that was not worth much. And that was another lesson, like if you really want to have something. So it was definitely something that I would start, you know, without starting, you know, for me, it was very easy to start with the interest rate because I was very familiar with it. But if you start with children, I definitely think that this practice of satisfaction and immediate gratification is something you need to work on. And another thing also, for instance, when they want to buy more expensive goods, for instance, so my three boys sort of saved up for something that was much more expensive, like some video game. So that's another thing that sort of they really worked for it. They had a goal and they succeeded
to it. Yeah, which is great, which is fantastic. You mentioned before, and I wanted to pick up on this, immediate versus delayed gratification. And clearly in an age where so much of technology and the news cycle is designed for very short attention spans and immediate gratification, how do we then impress on on people the necessary. And you started off, I think, perfectly well talking about how, you know, people are going to have 20, 25, 30 years of retirement that they need to save for, which is a huge amount of time considering the fact that most people only work for about 40 years and some shorter than that. So, you know, you're having to work for both, you know, for every dollar you're spending today, you need another dollar more or less for the future. How do we build those delayed gratification genes into people's DNA?
You know, I actually did an experiment once, with young children, not very young children, like teenagers. I went to give a talk in the ninth grade of my son, and I asked this very, very simple question. I asked one of the kids in the class if he would be willing to give me 10 shekels so I can buy something in the cafeteria because I don't have it now, and I will return it tomorrow.
Right.
And he told me no. He told me no. Why would I give you the 10 shekels, which I can use,
right,
to you? And I said, well, tomorrow I'm going to give it you back. Instead of going to give you 10, I'm going to give you tomorrow 11. Mm-hmm. The minute I said it, he said yes.
Right.
And I think the key here is to sort of say there's a gain for it.
Well, it's not, that, you know, 10% a day is, yeah, that's a pretty good interest rate.
I know. But listen, I couldn't tell you like something really, really ridiculous.
Yeah, someone compound that for 356 days a year.
Exactly. But I think the concept that I'm trying to show is that, you know, there is, you know, you cannot argue with compounded interest. I mean, right, you do have compounded interest, you know, even if you, if you put your money in all these pension funds and other funds that, you know, always sort of interact with the stock market, you cannot argue that it will be more than that. And people don't capture it. People are not happy with postponing something for the future if there is no gain associated with it.
Right.
So,
they have to see it. They have to. You have to make it real for people so that they understand why it's so powerful.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of like basically telling them, listen, you also have to acknowledge the fact that giving up consumption today is painful.
Yes.
And you have to sort of like give a compensation for this pain.
Right.
If you succeed to convince people that it's not only giving up, but also sort of like investing, or, you know, you have more in the future, that's something that already, I think, right, makes things more interesting.
Right. Now, Shokin Publishing, you're responsible for putting out books about economics and finance. How do you incorporate some of these concepts into that work?
Okay, so I would just say that Shokin Publishing is a general publishing house, which means we publish everything, because the Israeli market is very small. So we have like children's books and, you know, university books and, you know, fiction and nonfiction, everything. I can tell you that me as an economist, because I'm passionate about conveying economic concepts to the public, I always look for books that are not aimed at professional economists, but books that can help the general public understand economics. So I can tell you that, you know, and economics is so big and so vast that you can actually have so many books about it. And there's, right, and there's never like, it always amazes me that even when I publish the books and I know most of the things, I always learn something new from the books. That's what makes it super exciting. And I also want to say another thing, that the idea of financial literacy, in my opinion, is that it's so important that it's as important as reading and writing. And I think that, you know, children should learn about economics from grade A to grade all the years of the schools, exactly like math. And you know, professional economists need to go and study that in the university, but exactly like mathematicians are doing it in the university, whereas the rest of us just take math in all kinds of levels. Mm-hmm. And I think it's super duper important. So I can tell you, I actually always on the lookout for such books. And
okay,
I can tell you that I'm very happy about it, because it does succeed and they actually sell well. So I can tell you that, for instance, this is one. It's in Hebrew, but it's a translation from an English book. It's called The Economics in English, Economics with an X at the end, like comics.
Right.
This is actually Economics in Comics. And
fantastic.
I will just show you a little bit. It's all, you see, it's the opposite of what you think about economics, because economics is all about math and boring stuff. And if I say to people interest rate, they want to go to sleep. They want to go to sleep. Listen, it's like interest rate is the most boring thing if you don't excite people. I'm totally excited about it because I really understand it deeply. Right. But you know, if you're not, then you're like, you want to, I remember myself. So this is one thing. And I must tell you, you know, it's just so, for me, for me, it's like a big passion and, you know, very big satisfaction. Fantastic. The people tells me that they like it. Okay. And that it helped them. That's another thing. Yanis Varoufakis was the finance minister of Greece, and he wrote this beautiful small book. It's called "Conversation with My Daughter About Economics." That he wrote for his 15-year-old daughter.
Wow! Fantastic.
And he wrote it. It's a beautiful book because it's, you know, he's very. He has a lot of knowledge about economic history, and he basically details, you know, the whole evolution of capitalism. And he also sort of really shows the follies of capitalism in a way that we're not used to think about, even, I would say. We all know, you know, there are things that everybody know here, for instance, for me.
That's a book accessible to the general public?
This is for the general public.
Fantastic.
It's like a father telling his daughter. He did have a 15-year-old daughter at the time that he wrote it for. I just want to tell you that we translated it from Greek, Greek, because it was not available in English. We were before the US. But now it's already available in Amazon. They can buy it in English as well.
Well, I highly recommend it. And that's really great. So, you know, if we take some sort of sum up some of the lessons and the things that you know, it's good to talk to kids about, so obviously budgeting and savings, the importance of, you know, building good habits and delayed gratification, what it means when, you know, when there are interest rates in the world and how that impacts people's lives and obviously the importance of investing and how assets go up in value and what that can do for your financial health. So those are all great takeaway lessons, and it's great to have somebody with both your depth of experience and your personal experience come and talk to us about it. So those are some really great takeaway lessons. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. And thank you very much for being part of the podcast, and best of luck both in teaching the next generation of economists and also in making sure that the public have access to great literature here in Israel. And I'm sure that's a great benefit to everybody here. So thank you very much, Pat, and thank you for being on Definitely Uncertain.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, it's terrific. And for all of you out there, look out for more podcasts. As you can see, our guest list is rich and varied, and we hope that all of you are enjoying it. And please keep sending in those suggestions for future episodes. We're always looking out for those. So thank you to our team, to Andrew Herman, to Mayor Charlotte, and also to Udo Schlesinger. And thank you for all for listening, and bye-bye.